Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 192 on converting dead leads into cash with Chris Craddock. If you're into building wealth through real estate investing, you are in the right place. My goal is to identify high-caliber real estate investors and other industry service providers, invite them on the show, and then draw out the jewels of wisdom, those tactics, mindsets, and methods used to create millions of dollars or more in the business of real estate. Today's guest, Chris Craddock, is the founder and CEO of the Redux Group, a real estate brokerage team that sold over $150 million in real estate in 2020 alone throughout the Washington, D.C. and Richmond, Virginia region. He is the host of the Uncommon Real Estate podcast as well. The big idea for today's episode is that home buying companies like us, your direct seller marketing companies, can generate $10,000 or more every month by converting their dead leads into cash. Direct-to-seller marketing for real estate investors is a phenomenal way to generate deal flow. However, the waste product of this type of lead generation is that you end up with many retail price-seeking sellers that simply don't fit for most of our buy box as real estate investors. I know I'm looking for houses that need a renovation, can fix them up, can flip them retail. That's what I'm looking for. And there's not much I can do with the retail price seeking sellers. And Chris and I are going to do a deep dive on this, the converting of these leads into cash on this podcast, plus much more. Shall we get started?
All right. Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm great, brother. Glad to be here with you.
Nice. So I was doing some reading online and I found some stuff about you from the past, and I'm not sure if this was a blog post or a quote that somebody might have written about you, but I'm going to read it and I figured we'll begin there. So I quote, "Whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might."
All right. Yeah. I mean, I'm an all in kind of guy, but I think that's actually from the Bible, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is from the Bible. And the one that I happen to be, I guess, impacted, I was like dirt broke. I picked up the Bible in 2011. I was, you know, wrought with like alcoholism, drug addiction, the whole thing. And I got in real estate before, had success, was all cleaned up, and then I gave it all back. And I remember when I was reading the Bible, and it was a King James version, which can be tough place to start without any guidance, somebody who's explaining what some of that stuff actually translates to. But I remember one of the first things that really spoke to me was Proverbs 3:15, and it was, "She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you can desire can compare with her, and it's a personification of wisdom." And I just remember before that fact, for me, it was like I kind of read a couple books. I mean, I was like 30, 32 at the time. I kind of listened to people who had more experience, but looking back, I just didn't treat like knowledge, wisdom, experience, being around the right people, getting the right book at the right time, just having some kind of guidance. Like, I didn't realize that was important. All I cared about, Chris, at the time was I got to make some money. Like, I didn't want to hear any other stuff. We just, you know, I got to get some money in the door. But then since that time, and since that verse and a whole bunch of other verses and things that were put on my heart, I've really come to, you know, we do a nice deal and it's like, well, high five. And it was cool, the money, right? And where that used to be like kind of an emotional high for me now, for me now, it's like, wow, here's this revelation. Here's this idea. Here's like something I found, be it a book, a podcast, like we're doing today. Somebody dropped some accidental jewel of wisdom. And I catch it and like, I'm like, wow, I light up. And I remember lighting up that way. The only thing that could do that was like the money, right? in the beginning. Yeah. And now it's like at a different place, you know, it's like a big, big new chapter for me.
Dude, that's awesome, brother. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge thing is, you know, leveling up. There's something about that is just incredible as we get wisdom, as we get understanding, as we level up, you know, I think our relationships, our friendships, those are the things that really, really, really will help us, you know, level up like crazy. So yeah, no, I'm with you, man. Just seeking wisdom and you know, I just got back 2 weeks ago, I was in Napa Valley with a bunch of buddies from a mastermind. Last weekend, I was in Omaha with a bunch of buddies from a mastermind. And there's nothing better than hanging with people that are going to make you think bigger and you know, question where you're at. I love it.
Nice. So for listeners who might not know who you are, do you kind of want to do a little bit of a background story, Reader's Digest, of what you have done and what your business looks like today?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'll try to give like a 1 minute version. 2000, graduated college, went on staff with an organization called Young Life, loved it, changed my life. It was amazing. 2003, my wife got pregnant. I knew I wasn't going to be able to live on 20 grand a year in the DC area. So I went to the library and checked out every book I could on real estate investing and read every book they had. And almost like an idiot, I always say massive imperfect action, right? Imperfect action trumps perfect inaction any day of the week. I just started knocking on distressed properties doors. And nice. Somehow in four months, I made 12 times what I made in a year. And so I was like, this is awesome. And so I just put that money away. We bought the house we live in now. And I continued to do ministry stuff. And then, I have six kids. So the money started, like, as I got more kids, the money started disappearing fast. And so I started flipping houses again. But at that point, it was after the crash. And so it was short sales. And at the time, short sales were pretty easy to flip. But if you were licensed, they would pay a commission. You know, since then, they changed their margin. So it's a little bit harder to flip short sales these days. It's still doable, but harder. And so I ended up getting licensed. And, during that time in ministry, I'd always led large groups of people. And so I got a doctorate in leadership. I went back to school, got a doctorate in leadership because I just love leading people. I think it's great. I think that's the best way, you know, success with others. And so somebody gave me Gary Keller's book, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. I read it. It just blew my mind. And we started a real estate team in December 2014. Halfway through that, I realized I came from the investor world and investors and agents seem to live on two separate planets. And that if you could combine those two planets, that both people could make a fortune. And so we started doing that. And last year we did 167 million in volume, netted well over seven figures, built a company that helped other investors make a fortune. And I've got nine businesses, a number of them seven figure net profit business. So it's just been a heck of a ride over the last few years and been a lot of fun.
Nice, nice. Congratulations on that that journey. It sounds like it's been one heck of a good 3-4-5 year period now since 2014, right?
Oh man, it's been incredible. It's been a ride. I'll tell you, I was just joking with my wife, literally 2010, I was in ministry. I loved it. I made no money at all and things were so tight. And I live right near NIH. And I was like looking at NIH's website because they would allow you to donate blood and give you $300. And I was like, man, I could get $300 to buy Christmas presents for my kids, you know? And I go from that to, you know, 10 years later, I'm just thankful for the friends and family and all the people that helped me get where I'm at. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I hear that same progression. And I look at, as I shared my challenging period there, you know, early 2010s when I was kind of in the, and I also look back, like I got in 2006 and there were deals were like kind of easier to put together because the prices had gone up so high. And then when it went down 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, four, even 14, right? 13, I think we had, you know, at least we had stability by 13. But man, it was hard to make money. Like it, you know, when prices went from here to here, and let's say I'm trying to wholesale a deal or flip a deal. Well, like it's really tough to do that. And then I'd say in the last 3 years, we're in Atlanta too. So Atlanta kind of, you know, 2016, Atlanta was already like doing this like trending up kind of thing, which is a lot easier to make money in a market that's trending up. But certainly in the last 3, 4, or 5 years, you would probably agree that, you know, that trending up pricing in all of the markets throughout the country has certainly helped a lot of us make more and more money as, you know, as the tide goes up there. I hope that continues or levels off at least maybe. You know, I guess a lot of people have a lot of differing opinions as to when that's going to happen. But isn't it ironic as you think of it, Chris, like the preparation through, I mean, I don't know, some challenging times, 2010, 11, 12, 13, and you build these good habits and you figure out these markets and you learn how to operate and become profitable and maybe even at a pretty decent level. through that period of time. But then the combination of skills, you really serendipity, the blessing, the path that you're walking on brings you to this place 2014, 15, 16, where it just all kind of converges. You have this compounding effect of your skill set, the level, and then a little tailwind at your back with the market to like really capitalize on it. I don't know. It's something I've just been great, very, very grateful for recently as I look back over, man, I learned a whole lot of things in a really tough market that that really bore fruit when the harvest season came over the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one of the mentors I have in my life said this, never trust somebody that doesn't walk with a limp. And I was like, yeah, that is some good advice. I was just with a buddy of mine, and he's got a regular corporate 9-to-5 job, and he's taking all of his retirement funds, putting it in self-directed and investing in some syndications. So I talked to, which I think is fine. It's great. You know, syndications are great, but talked to the guy who's running the syndications, and you know, the numbers that he's buying at are like just so skinny. And I said, so what happens when it goes bad? And he's like, well, we're buying at a rate that it won't go bad. And I'm like, dear Lord, if you think it. And so that was the whole thing. I'm like, man, this guy's never been through something bad. Don't trust the guy that doesn't walk with a limp.
Yeah, true enough. True enough. Cool. So you're in the Washington, D.C., Richmond, Virginia market. Can you just paint a little bit of picture? Price point wise, what are the deals you've done? Price point wise, maybe what are some of the other deals in the marketplace? For real estate investors listening around the country, you know, paint us the picture what being in real estate in the Washington, D.C. marketplace is like, Chris.
Sure. So, you know, I do some flips. I do some wholesale myself. I have a big retail team. The D.C. area, so we're D.C., Virginia, Maryland. I've got an expansion team in Baltimore and an expansion team. So we do virtual Baltimore and in Richmond as well. Richmond, Virginia. And so it's a great market. And what we're seeing right now is if you're taking down any properties, I'll tell you the key, if you don't have somebody listing properties for you in that know what they're doing as far as negotiating goes, then you're just leaving a ton of money on the table. So obviously, before we jump into the REI Revive thing, I'll just give a little piece of wisdom on how to get the best price. If you take any properties down, this is it. Always list on a Wednesday, no matter what. Always list on a Wednesday. Do not take an offer till Monday. I don't care if the offer is awesome. You see all these agents all over the place. They're bragging about the fact they got four offers and went under contract in 4 hours, right? And I'm like, well, you just cost yourself or your client 20 grand because if you need to, I don't care if they say there's a deadline, I don't care what it is. Don't let them bully you into taking their offer. You put that on. And I'll give an example. So a flip that I had way out, like it wasn't even in the city. It was like way, way, way out. And I did it almost as a favor for a client of ours that just needed to sell fast. And so I bought it. I thought it would sell for 540. You know, if I put a little bit of work into it, I got an offer within 24 hours for 585, no contingencies, waive appraisal, everything. And I literally was thinking when it was me, right, my emotions were involved. I'm like, that's a great number. That's a great number. And I'm like, no, the system's in place for a reason. Follow the process, follow the process, follow the process. We waited. And here's the crazy thing. We ended up getting an offer for 640, everything waived. So literally, by just making sure you give it enough time on the market right now and don't get yourself bullied into accepting something, you're going to get a better price. So anyway, I hope that kind of is a good, you know, analogy there. People are like, look, I'll save on commissions, I'll save money. But literally, if I had a lesser of an agent that was willing to do something that wasn't the right SOP in negotiating, it would have cost me, you know, what is it, like 55 grand just right there. So like, and I see that with investors all the time. They're like, oh, I'll work with an agent that's a discount. They're going to give me a huge discount here. But I mean, literally, you're stepping over dollars to pick up pennies when you work with somebody that's not high talent.
Yeah. And to your point, right? So we've had those experiences as well. You're at 540 list price. This is part of why flippers are so ambitious right now in the marketplace, because that same trending up kind of a thing, We counted on the deal being worth 540 when we went into the deal and fixed it all up. And we've had now, as a community of fix and flip investors around the country, enough experiences where 540 turns into 580 by the time we're done the renovation because the market's moving. And not only that, the experience you had where it goes 585 to 640 from running the play correctly and sticking to the script, even when there's that extra money on the table. So everybody who's listening has got to keep in mind that that's why fix and flippers are paying more and more and more and more money for stuff that a lot of people say, they're paying numbers that don't make sense. But really, they are making sense. And this is what happens in a trending up market. Dangerous because we can trend up and then the the inventory of all the no longer COVID fearing unmasked Americans comes listing on in a rush. Also, maybe the foreclosures come listing in a giant rush and prices come down. But that's what we've seen so far. But one of the challenges, a highlight of your experience, and I'm sure a lot of other people around the country would relate, is you listed for 540. It's on for 585. And you mentioned, you said, I'm thinking it's 585. It's 45 grand over the asking price. And it's in that moment that's probably the most challenging moment to stick to the script and ride it out because you're afraid to, like, I don't want to piss this offer off. And then they back out and then I'm stuck with nothing. And the next one's 525. Oh, gosh. And we're in that market, to your point, where the 640 comes and it's happened enough. But on the flip side, there will likely come a day when that experience is not the tale that we're telling at the current moment. But that's not at this moment.
Right. Absolutely. No doubt.
Yeah, I find that there's I don't know if it's kind of a gambler's fallacy. I don't know if it's just a psychological thing when you start to deal with high, you know, big numbers, right? If you're doing deals like this all the time, you get accustomed to it, used to it, you can make it, your emotions don't get quite as involved. But man, in the first year or two, you start dealing with those kind of numbers. Oh my gosh, $45,000 extra dollars can play with your mind. It can kind of like cloud your judgment and cause you to do things and make a deal, you know, too quick and then shortchange yourself. And the funny thing is you'll probably never know that you shortchange yourself unless that 640K offer comes in, you know, before to let you know you screwed up.
That's the big thing. I was just talking to a guy. He's a new wholesaler and he called me, you know, he heard me on a podcast and he called me, he's in my market. And he was like, I've got a deal, but somebody wants to buy it for sale by owner. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I'll do the deal for you. I'll handle it for you. And I think he's going to end up taking this offer. And to me, I told him what the numbers were, but I like, literally, I don't have time to try to educate somebody if they don't want to be educated. He saw dollar signs, but yeah, he's going to take this offer at like 250. And I'm like, brother, like you probably would get 300 if you actually exposed it to the market and let somebody actually do this for you. But yeah, so now he's going to make probably 10 grand, but he probably would have made 60, but oh, well, like, people just, they got to understand, like, but that's the biggest piece there is that people aren't willing to educate themselves. People see a couple bucks and they don't realize that there's something much bigger than that. And, you know, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people set their sights on it. I remember before I did my first deal, I'd run around telling this example of a wholesale deal once I learned what wholesaling was. And in my example, I would always say like, yeah, you know, you'd contract for 10 grand, you'd sell it for 16 grand. You'd get it for 30 grand. You'd sell it for 36 grand. And for some reason, I had my mind locked on 6 grand. And how much did I make on my first deal, Chris?
6 grand.
So it's like we kind of set our, you know, our sights, and it's got to be within reason. I can't decide I'm going to make like $300,000 and then go out into a $200,000 neighborhood and I'm trying to make 300 grand. But there is this like learning of the proper profit spreads that can be made when you sort of know what's out there in the market. And again, I fall back to like, if this guy, in your example, Chris, would have leaned on, like I was talking about, the wisdom, the experience earlier in the podcast, right? It's like, let me have someone else help make these decisions. And this is where my company, Diamond Equity, does a very solid job. We stick by the standard operating procedure. We're going to get a fair price for our asset from the marketplace, and we're going to run our showings and our process in a way that's fair to all of our buyers so that we're not feeding specific buyers, specific deals, or keeping the best ones for ourselves. We kind of like, we run the play and we make sure it's fair for everybody, including us. So that when newer guys join my team, they can lean into that experience and run out accidentally taking it, you know, a $60,000 deal and turning it into a $10,000 profit check at the end of the day, like your example. So it's kind of a shame, or yeah, it's a blessing, depending on which side of the coin you are.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody's so afraid to give up any money. They don't realize the investment of it. And the analogy I use, my cousin is in residency right now as a doctor. She's a neurologist. And the reality is, when you're in residency, you don't make nearly as much as you do when you get out of residency as a doctor. Residency is the time to work to learn in order to get to the place where you can work to earn. And everybody wants to just skip steps. And you know what? When you skip steps, you pay for it. You pay a higher tuition than you think you're paying, but you just don't realize it. And that's why so many people really never achieve what they could achieve in life, is because they're afraid to spend money. And I think I said this before, I spend literally 10% of everything I make, I set aside to invest in myself and personal development. Like it's a no-brainer to me. Your business will only grow to the extent that you grow. Your business will not outgrow you.
Nice. So we were talking before we hit record, and I was talking about my business model being this like heavily advertised, and I'm sure like people listening, yep, we've seen your TV, Dan, we hear you on the radio. They probably got my letters I sent them, since they're all investors in my marketplace. And obviously we generate leads, and that's a big part of where we find our deals. And I also shared before we started that we do hold some licenses in Illinois so far, but we don't do brokerage in the other markets that I'm in. And one of the things we've attempted a lot was trying to set up little lead sharing things and send them out to specific agents. We've done 5 or 10 of these where we're paid through brokerage. We actually do own brokerages in the other areas. I forgot we have set them up, but we never did businesses through those brokerages that we actually are an owner with. And we did that so that we could legally be paid referrals on the deals that we would send to the agents. We've probably done 6 in the last 6 years where anyone closed any of those deals. And for us, some of the challenges were like making the handoff on this, like kind of scheduling the appointments, sending the other person out. It kind of got clunky and it really wasn't worth the time. Like, we're flipping houses and we're making $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 on a house flip. And we're probably making $450 on the referral for the agent thing. Like, it just really wasn't the best use of our time. So for us, we really wanted to send over a phone number and an address and have an agent, through some magical alchemy, turn that into a listing and then sell the listing and send us our referral. Do you have a better system or idea for how to handle that, Chris?
Brother, this gets me so excited because so many people that I know have tried this and they think it doesn't work. Or people try to, again, skip the learning curve and just say, oh, I'll figure it out myself. You know, that sounds great. Oh, just give it to an agent, which you're a perfect example of it. You've given it to an agent. I literally, in my mastermind, I just got back from in Omaha. One of my buddies, he's got a massive, massive business up in Michigan. And he's like, yeah, I've probably gotten paid like maybe 4 times in the last year. And we've sent about 1,000 leads. And I'm like, yeah, that's about the number if you don't do it right. Well, the crazy thing for me is we've like absolutely cracked the code on this. So I knew, coming from the investment world, going to the agent world, that there was a lot of business to be done here that was just being left. So what I did was I called the biggest wholesaler in my area, who actually was one of the biggest wholesalers in the country. You know, they've now become very, very close friends of mine. I was actually just hanging with them this afternoon. But the crazy thing was, I called them and I said, hey, let me handle your leads. And they're like, ah, we get these calls all the time. We're giving it to and it was literally one of the top agents in the country that they were giving it to. They're like, we gave her 1,000 leads in the last 6 months and she's closed 6 deals. And they're like, it's just not worth our time. Like, we're making a lot of money on these wholesale deals, not worth our time. And so I just kept calling back. They kept, you know, we had a good relationship and they were nice, whatever. But so eventually, after I called over and over again, because here's in sales, persistence breaks resistance, right? So I just kept calling, and eventually they said, okay, we'll give you some leads. They sent me 150 leads. 70 of them, when I called through, had already been sold. 30 of them were out of area. So I had 40 chances to get a deal. And out of those 40, I'm like, okay, she got 6 with 1,000. I got to get 6 with 40. So I did everything I could, turn on the best sales, learned the scripts that I could figure out. What are the pain points that people are calling investors for? And how can I solve that as an agent? I got six listings signed. I called them and said, hey, I got six signed. They're like, you need to come into the office. Turns out they liked me. So they didn't want to be like, hey, just, you know, screw off. I don't want to talk to you. So they were just being nice. So what they said was, hey, let's give him 150 leads from like 5 years ago so that he'll have no, he'll hit his head on the wall.
That's how it went down.
Just leave us alone. And literally when I got six deals, as many as the person they gave 1,000 of their warmer leads to, they're like, okay, come on in. So we started talking, and over the last couple of years, we built something. I kid you not, I literally send this group over $60,000 every month referral fees for leads that they just are throwing away, just dead in their CRM. And $60,000 a month, that's $750,000 in found money. These leads, they're not doing anything extra. They're not buying any extra leads. These are leads that they could not wholesale or fix and flip that now they just get sent over in this program. And so I've got a number of students at this point. Some are brand new wholesalers that have never done a deal. I've got one guy literally hadn't done a deal, ended up having about 10 grand in about 45 days coming his way from doing this. I've got another one out in the Midwest where it was a husband and wife team. And they're like, oh, I think we've got this whole agent thing done. And we talked about the numbers. And I'm like, bro, you're leaving a lot of money on the table. And I kid you not, after 2.5 months, they called me and it was like almost emotional, because the year before they had made 50 grand in their investment business and like about that much in the retail business. They called me and said, Chris, literally over the last 2.5 months, in what we're doing, we've been able to monetize. We have $90,000 coming into our family that we would have never seen. That's all because of this program. $90,000 just in 2.5 months, when the year before they made almost they made 100 grand in both of their businesses, and 2.5 months, 90,000 in new money. So it works from everybody, for the brand new to the big daddy, like monster behemoth, engine, because the reality is, if you have the scripts right, if you pass them off well, if you make sure that the calendar is set right, and then the second half of what we do, we teach the agent. That's the second half, because we don't want the investor teaching the agent. We teach the agent the scripts and the dialogues. Once you're in the house, here's how you close them up. We know there's five reasons why somebody calls an investor. So if you can answer those pain points, find out which one of those fives or ones of those five is why they called the investor, and you can answer those pain points, then you can get the deal done. It's like a doctor, right? You push on the pain. I've had four shoulder surgeries because of rugby and wrestling. And so if you push on that pain point, then they say, ow, and then you can write the prescription and get it done. Gotcha. Lots of talking. Sorry.
Gotcha. No, that's good stuff. So, I mean, what does the handoff look like, right? So the agent training piece and what they say after happens is some separate, but it sounds like there's a constructed system on the front end, which is the handoff. And like, yeah. I like to just like your big volume person just wants to hand you like 150 leads all at once. I'm assuming that's not exactly the best way to do it. Maybe it is, but what does it ideally look like in real time as this is happening?
No. So here's the thing. You got to not use the word realtor. The second you say realtor, everybody's brother's uncle is a realtor, right? They don't want to talk to a realtor. They called you for an investment deal. So you have to set the appointment for them, and you actually set an appointment for that agent. Probably 50% of the deals we closed, we would have never gotten in the door if they said, hey, do you want to talk to an agent?
Yeah. And so the agent's not cold calling them because we pushed a button in our CRM and fired off the contact info. The agent thinks that this person's going to show up and buy their house for cash as is, right? And they show up to the living room and now they probably present, oh, here's the guaranteed offer. It's cash and it's much less. And here's what your property would sell for if we do X, Y, Z and put it on market. And voila, they got a listing, right?
Yeah. And I know we don't have time to go through all of these, but I'll just say this. If you understand that there is scripting around all five reasons why they called an investor, you want to avoid them feeling like it's a bait and switch, right? So you've got to understand they called an investor for a number of reasons. One, they don't want to pay a commission. Two, they need to sell quick. There's a foreclosure pending. Obviously, there's a moratorium right now, but there's a foreclosure pending. There's some reason they've got to do it. They're moving, whatever. Three, they think their house is too messed up, too jacked up to sell in the MLS, where we know anything will sell in the MLS. Four, privacy issues. Maybe they're hoarders and they don't want their neighbors to see what their house looks like on the inside. Or five, they don't want people coming through at all hours of the day. They just want convenience. They want it fast. And if you we have our scripting around all of those things, and obviously there's some sales training involved to be able to understand what they're looking for before they say it, because once they say it, they've drawn their line in the sand and nobody wants to be wrong and backtrack from it. So there's scripting around figuring that out and then answering whichever ones of those they care about. And if you can do that, if you can identify their pain point, the people that make the most money are the ones that solve other people's problems. So that's that whole key right there.
Got it. So you talked about your other contacts handing these leads to probably the busiest Keller Williams agent in the world or whatever they said it was. Who's the right agent, right? This top performer was not the right agent in that instance. Maybe they're too busy, already making money, busy with their own business. Can you talk about the ideal agent and what the pitch looks like and maybe to split to that agent when you're trying to get one or many of these agents in the fold?
Yeah. So here's the deal. And this is one of the things that I think is really important in hiring anybody, because it's a partnership. And if you don't see it as that, you're missing out. I mean, just so you understand, if somebody can bring you like just this one investor that I work with, if I can bring them $750,000 in money they don't have overhead for because they've already paid for it, then you've got to understand the upside of what that is, that relationship is. It's a partnership. They should be your friends. I'll tell you what, if somebody makes you $750,000 that you don't spend an extra cent on, you should be buying them dinner. I'll just say that. but we become like that whole organization, that whole group, we become good buds. They've changed my life and I've changed their life, right? And now we're able to teach this awesome program here. And so now I've lost the question. What was the question again?
Well, you described who the agent is. Oh, I mean, what's the pitch to the agent in the split?
Yeah. So the agent, this is what you look for. So two things. One, I heard the best thing on hiring. So you're looking for a partner is what you're looking for. You're not giving them equity in your business, but they really do become like a partner to you because their upside determines your upside. And something that I heard, actually a pastor talked about this in finding a spouse. He said, don't look for potential, look for patterns, right? Not potential, look for patterns. And here's the places that we want to find patterns. There's four areas. And again, in our course, in our program, REI Revive, we teach how to look for these four patterns. So one is happy. I'll tell you, if somebody's not happy already, if they're angry, if they're upset, if they're annoyed, they're not going to be happy with you. They're going to complain about your splits. They're going to complain about your leads. They're going to complain. They're going they're just going to not be happy. Wherever they go, there they are, right? So happy, hungry is number two. And that's the other thing. Like, man, if the door is closed, will they climb through the window? There's this PDF book called The Go-Getter. It's 60 pages. It's incredible. If you need to find somebody that is a go-getter, right? They're going to figure it out. You rip open their chest and inside they've got a heart of a lion, right? So happy, hungry, humble. Here's the difference. Don't mistake confidence as the antithesis of arrogance, right? Like confidence and arrogance are two separate things. Humility and confidence are brothers, right? You can be confident and humble. What humble is learning, willing to learn from other people. So one of my students who actually, like most of my students have had massive success. One of the students that did not have success was because they got an agent who was very successful in their market, but they were not willing to follow our script. For whatever reason, she wanted to do her own script. She wanted to set her appointments her own way. She all of these different things that we said, no, do this. And she wouldn't do it. And I just kept saying, fire her. She's not humble. Fire her. Not the right person. But anyway, they had a long lasting friendship. And I'm like, all right, well, it's good. Like, his business, it probably cost him six figures to not fire that girl. And then smart. That's the last one is one of the things I talk to my kids about. One of the things I talk to my team about. One of the things I always think about for myself is, are you a quick learner, right? Do you have to pay the stupid tax? The Road Less Stupid is a great book. Do you pay the stupid tax by making the same mistake over and over and over again? If you had Groundhog Day and you went on that same sale that you didn't get 100 times, what would you have said different until you got the sale? Do you think about it? Do you have a high EQ as well as a high IQ? So happy, hungry, humble, and smart.
Nice. A lot of good stuff. And what do you do? Like a 50-50 split on the listing commission? I mean, you got to kick into the broker and everything for their chunk, I guess. So how does that work?
Well, I usually will say the agent should give 35% back, but then there's metrics and stuff like that for where you can actually ask for more as the investor if you're doing certain numbers.
Gotcha. So it's kind of this whole sliding plethora of optionalities that might come into play. Probably worth taking a dive deeper into the course for all those details, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, we don't have time to go through everything here, but I'll tell you, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, just about everybody that's been through it, everybody that actually has followed the system is making a lot of money. And that's the real key is, you know, are you willing to follow the system? Are you willing to find somebody, an agent partner that's willing to follow the system? And if you do, man, I'm telling you, if you get 20 people that say they're willing to sell their house, probably one of those 20 is willing to sell in your buy box that you're going to get. Those other 19 people, what happens, right? Like that's the key right now with the program that we have. It's like every time the phone rings, you can get paid, right? Instead of like one time out of 20, you can get paid.
Nice. I like it. Is there anything I forgot to ask that you feel like we should touch on here before we get to our wrap up, Chris?
Bro, there's so much more, but I mean, on a high level, that's the main thing there. It's just so important to really, really, really find a great partner, make sure that you follow the scripts. I mean, that's the other thing. Everybody can get where they want to go in time, but in our business, time is money, right? Like I think about this, that one investor, right? Like 60 grand a month, right? What happened if they tried to figure that out over it? Maybe it takes them a year to figure it out. What did that just cost them? And so for me, that's part of the reason why I pay people to be mentors in my life, because I think if you have speed, there's opportunity cost. Every month, every day that goes by, you're leaving so much money on the table.
Yeah. I mean, I dropped 5 G's on this one course for advertising that I was already doing the advertising. I didn't drop it. I invested the $5,000 in this advertising course for a medium that I already consider myself knowledgeable, you know, I don't want to say a master of, because I think that takes away the willingness to learn if you've mastered something, right? And I walk into that with an attitude of, hey, I'm digging into this because I think there's one or two things. And I know from running a business that's done the kind of figures that we've done over the years that like one small idea in the optimization of this little piece, you know, little hinges swing big doors, right? And I'm just looking for one little, like I said, one piece of wisdom, light bulb goes off, I'm good. And I got more than that out of that that course I recently went through. So as we wrap up here, Chris, we have already talked about the Bible. You mentioned The Go-Getter as a book that probably should be read. Are there any others that you would recommend?
Oh man, brother. I believe readers are leaders. Leaders are readers. And so I usually go through about a book a week. I love The Genius of the And. When I work out every morning, and when I work out, I'm always listening to an Audible book. So it depends on what you're looking to do, right? It depends on where you are in your business. So it's a hard to answer overall, but as entrepreneurs, I do think that every entrepreneur should read The E-Myth. I think every entrepreneur should look at EOS Traction. I think every entrepreneur should look at Who Not How. I think every entrepreneur should look at the book Scrum. And then I think every entrepreneur should look at the book Clockwork, because all of those are how to build a business and how to get leverage in your life. And I'll just share one thing on Clockwork. One of the things that they had you do was everything you did in a week, you wrote it on a sticky pad and put it on your wall. And then at the end of the week, you kind of divvy those things up and you're looking at what are the things here that I can get off of my plate and leverage and give to somebody else to do so that I can level up in my own life and spend my time in more dollar productive activities.
Nice. Good stuff there. Much more than two. I like it. So we will. I love it. Tons of knowledge, a whole bunch of books on the list now that I get to go through. A couple I've read, a lot I've not. So I'm looking forward to that. So we normally close our episode with a final question around the crown jewel of wisdom, because it's REI Diamonds, the jewel. So this would be the crown jewel of wisdom that we get to at the end. And I'm going to take it in a different direction than I normally do on this one, Chris, because you host a podcast. You host the Uncommon Real Estate Podcast, I believe. So my question here as the crown jewel would be, what has been the biggest idea that you've discovered through hosting your podcast and then implemented as a result of being, you know, being the host of the show?
What is the number one thing that I've implemented? Oh man, that is a hard, hard question here. I would say actually the number one thing, I just implemented this, the infinite banking idea, starting to invest in whole life insurance and using that. So I do some hard money lending, and using that to do some of my own hard money lending and really, putting my cash in a place where again, this is a longer question, but I do think with inflation, our cash is losing value. So I think it's the best way to stockpile your cash and be able to use it for ways that's going to, like the richest man in Babylon, where it says you send your money out like an army and it comes back with more, or it loses and comes back with less. And I think that's the easiest way to come back with more.
Nice. It wasn't fair. I asked the question. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a really hard one. I mean, I don't make money from my podcast. I don't, I do this for passion, but I primarily do this to block out the distractions and then have a high level conversation like somebody like you, right, Chris, who's doing a bunch of stuff and you come on with all these great ideas and it challenges myself to step my game up. And I can't believe I asked you to pick one idea. So I appreciate
it. I was running through and I'm like, there's a bunch of good ones. What's the best one?
Yeah, that was a non-starter. My apologies. But anyway, do you have a website or contact information you'd like to share, or an ask of the audience? Now is your moment, Chris.
Yeah. So anybody wants to get in touch with me on Instagram, it's an old high school nickname, at Crad Rock, CRADDROCK. I try to answer any DMs on there. So if you want to get in touch with me, that's an easy way. You mentioned I have Uncommon Real Estate as a podcast. I know the average podcast listener listens to 7 podcasts. So I hope I could be one of your 7. Obviously keep listening here, but I would love to be one of the other 7. And that's really for the agent investor is what we're geared towards. wholesalinginc.com/revive is where you can find information about REI Revive. If you click the link, we can get in touch and just see if where you are in your business is a good place to, really start monetizing any dead leads you may have coming in.
All right, cool. Hey, I got a couple pages of notes. I got a lot of great ideas. I really appreciate you coming on the show, Chris.
Hey, brother. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
And thank you for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Remember to review and subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. Just search REI Diamonds and click subscribe. Are you interested in receiving my weekly Big Idea email, where I provide the most valuable jewel of wisdom that I discovered during the recording of the most recent episode? Most of the ideas that I use to build Diamond Equity Investments, my house flipping company, most of those ideas came from guests that came through this show. In other words, these weekly big ideas that I implemented. You can sign up at reidiamonds.com to receive that email. And at that site, you can also access the 191 episode archive to go searching through for the previous big ideas. Again, that's reidiamonds.com. So far this year, 2021, my house flipping company I just mentioned, Diamond Equity Investments, that I founded and still manage to this day, bought and sold 157 houses. Well, mostly houses. There were a few apartment buildings in there as well. And we currently have another 157 more in our inventory, ironically. I share that to say that there are three ways that you and I can do business. Number one, if you are interested in having access to the best deals in your market, in other words, access to deals that you can buy at low enough prices to actually profit after renovating and reselling, go now to accessrealestatedeals.com. And number two, accredited investors who are seeking double-digit returns can sign up to receive private mortgage investment opportunity emails at fundrehabdeals.com. That is the list that funds my real estate transactions. Number three, finally, I am always buying houses that I can flip and occupied apartment buildings with below market rents, typically. I buy them stable, I buy them not stable. I like to buy these deals that fit this description in Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, or the Phoenix, Arizona markets, anywhere about a two-hour radius from downtown in those cities. So if you are working a deal there, please email me the details. We are at the conclusion, my friend. Next up, we have Van Sturgeon joining us to discuss rehabbing houses at a high volume, the BRRRR method, buy, rent, refinance, renovate, and buying apartment buildings throughout the U.S. and Canada. So I'll catch you and Van on the next episode, my friend.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.